broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio. With any monster brought to you by Tequila and Embajador. All right, so Damon Cotton had some questions, right? Damon, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
And it has to do with the salary cap. And in a nutshell, what were you wondering about with the salary cap?
That's a pretty loaded question. I didn't really have any questions. It was just so much as the Raiders' cap concerns were, I don't have questions that I just, I have points.
Okay, go ahead.
That just, let's say with the Kenyon Drake signing, only $3 million this year. And it's like, oh, that's good. But next year, it's eight. And then so you either release him or.
No. They're not really. They owe him that money.
So the cap is going to be even higher next year. So maybe why not maybe a one-year deal for $6 million or maybe just space that out, you know, maybe try to even it out more. So why have his cap hit be even higher next season?
Well, first of all, you did that in a way where you wanted more flexibility this year. And you're understanding that next year, I think the Raiders have $50+ million under the cap right now, projected to going into next year. They only have like 25 players on salary going into next year. And that doesn't account for, obviously, this year's draft class. We'll see how many guys make the team and are here. But, you know, they're in really good shape because they have flexibility. So they're not so much worried about next year's salary cap, because even with that $8 million cap hit, they've got more than $50 million right now to spend. So it's having the ability to look ahead and understand, okay, where are we right now? What does it look like the next year? What does it look like the year after that? Where could we maybe move? Where could we move some salary or some guaranteed money to in the future in order to be able to be a little bit more flexible right now. So that's basically what you do, and that's what they did in this situation. The $8 million is of less significance next year than it would have been this year, because they have a whole bunch of money that they have under the cap as of right now next year, whereas they needed some of that space, you know, more of that space this year to work with this year.
Okay, and then Colton Miller, how his cap hit is going to be even higher this year. I know that maybe long term that's going to be the solution, where you say long term, it's under $15 million by the time those final years of that contract extension kick in. But for this season, doesn't it hurt the team?
It doesn't really hurt the team.
You don't have the money available, because it's like you're saying it like,
no. They do have the money
so
available.
Much, but it's like you can't go out and sign, like you can't go out and spend money that you want. Why haven't they? Obviously the money is not there.
No, that's not true. That's where that's the misunderstanding that you have. There's a thing in the NFL called proration, okay? And in a nutshell, here, look, I think the reason that they haven't gone out and got somebody is because, you know, they view somebody, and this is how they view them numbers wise, and they're not going to budge from that. You know, you can't just be given money just to be given money. They have an idea of what a player's worth is. That's the offer. And if you want it, great. If not, that's fine too. Nothing's preventing them from signing a player. And this is what you do. You know, right now it looks like, you know, if you look at the Raiders salary cap space, just the salary cap space, it looks like, oh, they're in bad shape. They aren't. They're okay. They're perfectly fine. In terms of the salary cap right now, because what you can do, what people misunderstand is the cash part of it and the cap space part of it, okay? And in the NFL, you have what's called proration. And what does that mean? What does proration mean? It means, Damon, let's say you're a great free safety, and I'm the Raiders, and I want to sign you to a contract. But But Vinny, you have this much under the salary cap. How can you make it happen? Well, Damon, I'm going to give you a 3-year, $15 million contract, okay? And I'm going to give you $10 million guaranteed, all right? But you're saying, but you don't have that to be able to give it based on under the cap. Well, that's okay, because what we're going to do is we're going to take $10 million of that $10 million that's guaranteed, I'm going to put it into a signing bonus rather than salary. And I'm going to be able to prorate that signing bonus over the course of the 3 years of your contract. What is 10 divided by 3? That becomes that's the way the Raiders can manage not having the cap space, but being able to spend cash in a way that satisfies you, the player, and it's spread out over the 3 years rather than being a big hit in this year. So you can sign a player to a 3-year contract with a guaranteed $10 million and make this year's salary as low as you basically want it to be able to fit it under, quote unquote, the cap. And it's done all the time. So it's not, you don't worry about how much cap space. Obviously, at some point it becomes, you know, an issue if you're talking about a big, huge contract, but in the kind of signings that they're looking at right now, it doesn't really matter much. They'll be able to get who they want if they want that player at the price that they want that player and still be able to make it work under the salary cap by spending cash up front, signing the player to a whatever. You can put as many years as you want on that and spread that salary bonus, just divide it over the amount of those years so that you're not taking a hit in year one. You're spreading it out. You're spreading that cash out over the course of multiple seasons in order to get it under the get that salary under the salary cap.
Well, the team just keeps kicking the can down the road. When are they ever going to be like serious about when's the year going to be the year for the Raiders?
Well, I mean, why are you saying that that's not happening right now? I mean, I don't understand your question right there. You know, they're not kicking anything. That's one good thing that the Raiders don't do. They don't kick it down the road. They'll do every once in a while on a smaller deal like that. But all their contracts are basically pay as you play, and that doesn't. And by doing that, it doesn't hamper them down the road. They're in tremendous shape next year on the salary cap and years ahead because of the way that they're structuring these contracts. So you're asking me, how can they make a signing this year to help them? And I just explained it to you. And, you know, it's not...
Yes,
it's
not gonna... I hear you, but they haven't done it yet. So you're giving me, like, the possibilities, but I'm just saying, still no free safety. And that's just going to be my... I hear what you're saying. I hear you. I'm listening. And I hear you. But still no free safety.
And duly noted, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to, I mean, what are we? We're in, April 8th, but you're arguing in circles. You're saying that they can't do it because of the salary cap. And I'm saying, no, that's not the case at all.
Because they haven't.
The difference. Okay. Again, listen to what you're saying. What's the question? Are you're asking, if you're asking, why haven't they, you know, we can try to discuss that. But you're implying that they can't because of the salary cap, and that's just not the case.
Well, yeah, there's some money that if you want to just go give, like, if they could sign someone for like a $3 million contract guaranteed right now, okay, maybe like one season. Yeah, that can happen. But why haven't they?
I think it's because both players right now and team, more than anything, I think that they believe that they're going to be able to get somebody in the draft. That's why. And it was interesting because I was listening to a podcast that Richard Sherman was doing, and he was talking about that very thing, about how teams are, how things are going to have to wait till after the draft for him. Because, and he goes, I completely get it. I totally understand it. There's teams right now that are going to try to find their young guy in the draft and then circle back to players like myself after the draft, after the dust settles and teams realize what they were able to get, what they weren't able to get in the draft, whether they satisfied all needs or have some other needs that they still have to address post-draft. That's where those type of signings are going to end up happening. So, you know, you're saying go sign a free safety. They may not need to sign a free safety after the draft, but that doesn't mean that safety that they have in mind right now isn't going to be there, you know, after the draft. I'm sure they've talked to a bunch of guys and had that kind of very specific conversation. Like, look, we're not in a rush to take care of it right now. We're going to focus on the draft for right now. But let's talk again after the draft. That happens all the time. And from the player's perspective, you could actually increase your value by waiting, because now the Raiders come knocking on your door, or anybody else, after the draft, because they weren't able to get who they wanted in the draft, and all of a sudden that need becomes even more pronounced. Now you'll be able to, as the player, say, well, okay, great, now it's going to cost you this, and if the team wants to do it, they will. If not, obviously they'll pass on and move on to another player. But again, the distinction that we're trying to make is it's not because the Raiders can't do it. They have the money. They can make it work under the salary cap. It's just that they've basically right now, at this point, chosen not to, because I think that they're looking to the draft. And I also believe that they do have an offer out to one or maybe even two players right now that the players are sitting on, you know, and so it just hasn't come to fruition yet. But I think they have offers out to a couple of players at a couple of different at a couple of key positions, and everyone's just playing the waiting game right now.
Yeah, I hear you, but you made some solid points, but my mind's not changing. Solid points
from,
what have you made up your mind about? Solid points.
I don't understand
made.
What you made your mind up about.
The mind's been made. What do you mean? I've made up my mind.
Of what though? What conclusion have you come to, Damon Cotton?
That they don't have the money to spend because they spent it all on offensive players this offseason.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad that that's what you're thinking, and you finally admit
it. Show me the
case
that that's not true.
You're wrong.
Most of the money this offseason has gone to more offensive players besides Yannick Ngakoue. More money has been spent on an
Are you completely forgetting all the players that they have signed? They've signed
all the players off the defense on the defensive line that you basically could have just got off the scrap heap.
There's ways to make exaggerating.
No disrespect to those players, but Yannick Ngakoue had offers, but Solomon Thomas, no disrespect to him, he wasn't, like, teams weren't clamoring for Solomon. Like, nobody's like, oh, dagnabbit, we didn't get Solomon Thomas this offseason.
I think Quentin Jefferson is a guy that had multiple offers, and I think he's going to be a valuable piece. You know, they obviously also brought back Jonathan Hankins. They brought back Nicholas Morrow. So it's not like they haven't spent any money defensively. And, you know, they're going to get the free safety thing fixed. I don't know why, you know, you're not that you're freaking out about that, but I think you're wrong is what I'm saying. In fact, I know you're wrong. And I think that there are offers that they have out there to a couple of players, and one of which or multiple of which is in that secondary. But again, not everybody's in a rush right now to get it done because there's the draft that's coming up, and players want to see what you know, where the dust settles after the draft, and so do teams. So it's not we're not at a point in the NFL calendar where you have to fill every single hole by right now. You keep your options, but you're almost better off keeping your options open, and that's as the player and as the team, because you never know what might happen in the draft. There might be a trade possibility in the draft. Somebody might fill a big need in the draft and figure, you know what, we're going to trade so-and-so. We're gonna make him available now. All of these possibilities exist post-draft and sometimes even during the draft and sometimes like literally the day before the draft or leading up to the draft. So we'll absolutely see. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Justin wants to talk about the draft. How you doing, Justin?
Hey, Vinny. Can you hear me?
I got you, brother.
You guys are killing me. You guys need to make this a reoccurring segment every show.
I don't know what he's not getting. I don't know what Damon's not getting, but okay.
Hey, it's good radio. Anyways, hey, I'm at work, so I can't talk too long, man. But there's been a name floating around, dudes flying up draft boards. Just wondering if you've heard anything on the guy. Don't know if the value would be there at 17 for him, but maybe a trade up early second or something like that. The I think it's Jamin Davis out of Kentucky, that linebacker, kind of seems like...
Yeah, he's really tearing it up right now. Probably a late
Adams
first... He Go ahead.
No, yeah, I was just saying, like, comps similarly, like, to, like, the Cam Chancellor, Jamal Adams type guy. Just wondering if you're hearing any buzz about him, like, maybe late first, early second, but you think it'd be a reach at 17?
Well, probably at 17. He's projected to go late first, early second round. So you're in a little bit of no man's land if you're the Raiders, because probably a little bit too much of a reach to go get him at 17, but no guarantees whatsoever that he's going to be there at number 48, and he really is starting to fly off the fly up the ladder, as they say, and you know, definitely a player that would fit. You know, you're talking about a guy at 234 pounds. He seems like a three down kind of a guy, just a 1 year starter. That makes you wonder a little bit, but nevertheless, he made the most of that year, didn't he? He's kind of a middle linebacker I'm reading the Athletics draft guide right now. Mark Stoops had a 4-2-5 hybrid scheme, and he played that middle linebacker. This is what Dane Brugler says. Overall, Davis isn't a banger and needs to improve his take on skills, but he trusts his eyes and plays fast to quickly respond to play development. He projects as a run and chase linebacker and a Zach Cunningham clone. So I like him, and I think that the ceiling is still high for a guy that, you know, played or, you know, started 1 year in college. And he's definitely, especially athletic, has been really impressing a lot of people and flying up the board as a result. Justin, thanks for the call. Keep on knocking on our door anytime you want. We always appreciate it. Ryan wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Ryan?
Doing, Vinny?
I'm doing good, man.
Cool. So, you know, me and my friend Juice, shout out to Juice, we talk Raider football all day, every day, all year long. This is what we do. It's a major passion for us, you know. So we have an acute, shrewd point of view of watching tape and watching things. So we feel pretty in tune with the actual team that's being put out there on the field. And I know people are, you know, we have a lot of history of losing. You know, I have to understand. I have to sympathize with Raider Nation. I'm in it. I know what it's like. I've been there with you. I was at Charles Woodson's last game. I was at a Chargers game in Oakland about 6-7 years ago, where if we won it, we were in the playoffs, and it just didn't happen. But I like what we're doing here in Vegas. I'm giving these cats a clean slate, and I just love the overall ability. I love the talent. I love the work ethic. I love the coaching staff that's coming in. I love the overall atmosphere of just the players that have been brought in over the last 4 years. It just feels different to me, you know. But I'm just excited for the draft, because I feel like this is the first draft we're going into where I feel like if we hit, then, you know, we're sitting pretty in the playoffs, and whatever improvement the players can make in the off season and stay healthy during the season, I feel like it, you know, just sky's the limit. So I'm gonna let you go, but just wanted to give my thoughts there. And I'm just looking forward to the draft.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. And don't be a stranger. Call whenever you want. Appreciate the passion for your team, and we're here to help as much as we can. And I'm with you. I think that I remember preparing for last year's draft, my first year covering the Raiders, full time. And I'm like, you know, they need a wide receiver. They need, some depth along the offensive line. They had a hole at cornerback. The third linebacker was uncertain who was going to be able to, defensive line depth was a huge issue. Safety was an issue. Jonathan Abram was coming back. There were questions about him. There were a lot of areas on the field. They didn't really have a backup running back necessarily, and there were holes, a lot of holes and a lot of question marks. And, you know, when I'm doing the preparation now this year, I think it's much more defined this year compared to last year. Now, granted, there's from the Raiders' perspective, a leap of faith that either Andre James or Nick Martin is going to hold down the center spot. I think they're really comfortable with all the three guards in John Simpson and Denzel Good and Richie Incognito holding down the two guard spots out of those three players. Obviously, Colton Miller is there at left tackle. But as far as the left or the right tackle, they need to find a right tackle. But I think that there's capable players in this draft, and still even in free agency, if they don't fill it in the draft, that they're going to be able to rely on. And when I look at that defense, again, to me, the needs are much more condensed. You need a free safety without question. And I think you need depth at cornerback. Whether you want to bring in a veteran cornerback or draft another cornerback and move Damon Arnett inside, or do you want to bring in a veteran inside? There are players of that ilk that are remaining, and that's why out on free agency, and that's why I think they're waiting until after the draft to really sew some things up to see where they are after this draft. Because if you can fill as many needs with the draft, and it's always about that. Rather than go out on the open market to spend, that's the ideal way to do it. But I think that there's enough out there on both aisles, shopping aisles, on the draft shopping aisle, and on the remaining free agent shopping aisle, where they're going to still be able to fill those needs. And there aren't as many now as there were in the past. And I think that's definitely it helps the Raiders be a little bit more selective and even a little bit more patient in filling their needs. And I think that's how they're operating right now. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. Alan is in Las Vegas. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great, Vinny. How you guys been?
Doing really well, thank you.
Yes, sir. I have a question for you, man. I just thought about this morning. I haven't heard too much about this idea or concept, but I'm thinking if it's any way that a Penei Sewell drops down to 14 or 15, would the Raiders try to make a trade to jump up and get him? And two, if we were to draft him, can we either put him or Colton Miller on the other side of the line?
Yeah, I was thinking about that just the other day, actually. Do you trade if Sewell starts falling? I think to your second question, I think he comes in and plays right tackle if that's the way it goes, because there's another player that's kind of in that same situation, Christian Darrisaw, who's a left tackle by trade, but if he came to the Raiders, would have to play right tackle because Colton Miller's over there. But the one way to look at it is, Colton Miller is here through 2023, I believe it is, or 2025. So you can start projecting ahead. If you draft a guy that's really a good left tackle, but have him play right tackle, during the first part of his career, there's your natural, replacement plan to replace Colton Miller, when it's time to replace a Colton Miller with a still relatively young, player. So, we'll see. As far as trading up for Sewell, I don't know. I think that I don't think they trade up. I think the more likely scenario is if one of those really premier difference maker defensive players are in arm's reach, where it wouldn't take a whole lot to move up to go get him. I think that that's more likely, or even more likely than that, is to trade down, get some more assets, and be able to fill more holes. That way, trade down comfortably, knowing that you can still get the guy that you prefer, whether it's 23, 25 in that range. Pick up another third round pick maybe, or a fourth round pick, to be able to help yourself in some other areas as well by bringing in more players. I think that's even more likely than the trade up scenario. But man, I'm saying this, watching Michael Parsons last night like I did, this is a guy that you could put on the field very, very early, and he can really be he could be one of the best defensive players on this team. He'd be a difference maker ASAP, and I think if you're the Raiders, that's what you need. You need guys that are going to be able to come in as early as possible on this defense and be able to make plays. I think he does that. I think he accentuates everything else that you have on this defense, because there is talent on this defense. Is it Hall of Fame game-changing talent? No, not right now. But is it Pro Bowl caliber talent? I think Yannick Ngakoue is a Pro Bowl caliber player. I think Corey Littleton has been a Pro Bowl caliber player. And I think that if you put some real game-breaking type talent around guys like that, this has a chance to be a very, very solid defense. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy.
What up, what up, what up? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. It is a Thursday. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore. Brought to you by Tequila and Bajador, talking about the draft, talking about draft needs, where the Raiders stand as far as their roster goes. It doesn't take Sherlock Holmes or Vince Lombardi to figure out. They need starters at right tackle and free safety. And still a question mark as far as the slot cornerback position.
Another position that needs to be filled? Shocker.
What? I'm sure Amik Robertson is going to have a lot to say about that. That's why they drafted him last year. And the dude's putting the work in. We'll see. A lot of this is going to be also in terms of who's ready or who's not. Can't wait to get a look at these guys come OTAs and see where they are physically, where they are mentally. You know, a big year going from year one to year two. And, you know, guys like I have to chuckle sometimes because guys like Amik Robertson, I've seen it a million times where, you know, a guy takes a red shirt year, barely even plays, but there's a reason why they're on the roster because they, you know, on the they're dressing out during games and whatnot. It's because there's a belief in them. But the reality of it is, you know, when you're a team like the Raiders or any team that drafts a guy in the fourth round like this, you almost ideally just take your time. There's plenty of time left to develop and to develop the right way. And all of a sudden they come back and are a factor the next year. I remember a guy with the Rams by the name of Sebastian Day. He's a big defensive tackle, I believe from Rutgers. And the Rams drafted him in 2018 and didn't play a lick, but was always on the roster. And, you know, the people in the office, in the front office, people in the Raiders Rams building were like, you know, redshirting him. What does that mean? Well, it's just like you go when you're freshman year in college, you're taking a redshirt year, but it doesn't mean it's a wasted year. And that's the thing I think some fans have to reconcile with themselves when they're thinking about these rookies and, you know, using the term redshirt for an NFL player. It's the very same concept. Not everybody's ready to play day one. And that doesn't mean that guys can't go out there and perform. But ideally, as an NFL team, you're really trying to get the work put in and develop them for down the line. And Sebastian Day, his rookie year comes and goes. I'd have to look back to see if he even played any snaps. He was dressed out on the roster, you know, all of those good things, but didn't play a lick. So it's basically this time in 2019 and in April of 2019. And I remember having to go over to the Rams building to do an interview. And who do I run into in the parking lot is Sebastian Day. And I'm looking at him. I'm like, holy cow, man, you've transformed your body. Looking like not a completely different person, but obviously he was putting the time in. And he told me, just laughed. He's like, yeah, man, this is a big year for me. I can't wait. I'm ready to go. And now he's been a quality starter ever since then. Took over as the nose guard, you know, in their 3-4 defense and has been a good quality player. And this is a guy who didn't play a lick in his first year. The average fan didn't even know who the heck this guy was. He was drafted in the mid rounds. He spent a year redshirting and developing behind the scenes, and then was ready to go when his number got called in his second year. And a guy like Amik Robertson and Tanner Muse, guys like those type of young players, there's no reason to think that they can't be on similar tracks. Yes, their rookie years weren't, Tanner Muse was hurt his whole rookie year. Amik Robertson wasn't ready to perform his rookie year as a fourth-round pick, making that position switch. But seen it too many times where by year two, by year three, all of a sudden you're talking about a good quality player. So,
seen it even more times by year two and year three that it just doesn't work out.
There are times that happens, yes. That's why, thankfully, every year there's a draft. And so you're always in that process of putting new players into the system, and it's a number. It becomes a numbers game too. I mean, you're not going to hit on everybody, but a guy like Amik Robertson, if you go watch his tape in college, he can play football. There's enough there to work with. Now, does he want it bad enough? Can he successfully make that switch from outside cornerback to slot cornerback? Those are questions that need to be answered, basically. But to assume that he can't or won't, or that that's a hole that the Raiders, or just to assume that's a position that's not adequately handled right now is a mistake. We don't know, and I'm not there in the building right now. I know Amik's been over there working out, and I know that he's definitely. I've seen some of the footage of him working out, and I don't know if he's out there. When some of these Raiders get together over at the park, the local park, to get some workouts in. That's been ongoing. But there's no reason to think that a guy like Amik Robertson, can't turn it around. I don't even want to say turn it around. Be on that development path, that right development path. And so, but we're going to find out. But like I said, there's always another draft. There's always another crop of players. If Amik can't get it done, then you move on to another plan. But they haven't been in a major rush to go, bring in a slot cornerback. They cut LaMarcus Joyner, the starting slot cornerback from last year. Usually when things like that happen, it expresses a level of hope or at least conviction that, maybe it's Amik's time now. Maybe he's ready to take the bull by the reins. But, I think that there will be competition as well, for him. So we'll see. And the one area that I know that they need somebody is definitely free safety and right tackle. I'm not comfortable with who's on the roster right now currently, that those positions are filled. I'm not feeling Brandon Parker as the starting right tackle. He has a chance to come in and prove everybody wrong. But I think that's too big of a risk to put Brandon Parker out there for 16 games and just count on him to get it done. I don't think that's feasible. And I think Jeff Heath is a good solid player. I think he's more suited to play strong safety than he is free safety. If he in a pinch, he's a guy that you can certainly rely on. But over the course of a 16 game season, the Raiders need to do better. So those are the two positions right now that there's uncertainty. And so we'll see. That slot cornerback position too. I keep saying this. Who knows? I mean, let's just go down this path. If you do sign Richard Sherman, all right, and I think that he could still play, and if he's beyond the leg issues that he had last year, I think he could still be a serviceable player, for another year. Let's say they go get Richard Sherman, and I do believe that there's been contact. I do believe there's been discussions. And
did you see him at Circa?
Yeah, yes, I did see that. Yes, and I think that's another situation that could be a post draft type of a situation, or maybe he's waiting until after the draft to make his decision, but let's just say Richard Sherman gets signed. All right. He's going to start at cornerback. And I think he's got another good year, or at least one good year left in him. Now, okay, Damon Arnette, who has played in the slot at Ohio State, maybe he becomes your slot cornerback or goes over there and fights, you know, Damon Arnette for that starting position. And whoever isn't, you know, who doesn't prevail in that battle now becomes the fourth cornerback. You need a whole bunch of them. So, you know, a guy like Richard Sherman, his presence just adds to the depth now. Now, you know, guys, but again, so much of this is predicated on Damon Arnette taking that step forward and Amik Robertson taking that step forward. Is it a guarantee? No, but they're too young to just kick to the curb or think that, you know, or just, you know, you want to be in a quick, rush to replace them. That's not feasible. You can't be, you know, keep doing that. You have to have a belief that what you saw in the draft process is there, and it's now on the coaching staff to develop them. And, you know, we haven't even brought up really necessarily Gus Bradley's name and Ron Miles's name right now, but those guys are so important this year in a lot of different ways. Obviously, game planning and putting guys in the right position to succeed are huge. Was that always the case the last couple of years? I tend to think not. And I remember getting texts from people telling me that it was an issue last year as far as what roles were, what guys were supposed to be doing. Guys didn't know what they were supposed to be doing. And a lot of times when you hear talk like that, it's on the coaching. Now Gus Bradley and his staff have to do a better job, period, than what was happening last year. So game planning, scheming, putting guys in the right position to succeed, that's on them. Developing guys, making sure Damon Arnette is on the right path. Amik Robertson is on the right path. Jonathan Abram is on the right path. That is on Gus Bradley now and his staff. And they're getting paid a lot of money and being given a lot of responsibility to do that. Also, talent acquisition, the draft, free agency, their input, having weight, pulling weight, and listening to them. You know, Joe Barry, the former Rams linebacker coach, is now the Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator. I've recited this story, but it bears repeating. And it's a story about Corey Littleton. And at the time, Joe was the linebacker coach with the Washington Football Club. And the scouts and general manager gave him tape of a linebacker at the University of Washington to assess. They wanted him to put a grade on this linebacker, okay? And so Joe tells me, he goes, I'm watching this tape of, I forget the guy's name, but just say it's number 32, right? So he's watching number 32, but this other kid by the name of Corey Littleton keeps popping onto the screen and just catching Joe Barry's attention. All right, and so Joe's telling me, he goes, I'm breaking this film down of this kid that they wanted me to look at. And after I complete the whole process, go back to the scouts and the general manager, and I say, hey, look, the guy that you asked me to look at, he's all right, he's pretty good. But the guy that we need to be looking at is this kid, Corey Littleton, who is all over the field making plays. This is the guy that I think that we should target somewhere along the line. He didn't say he was a first or second or third round pick, but maybe in that fourth or fifth round, this would be great value. So Joe's like, come draft night, we get into that area of the draft, and I'm over there pounding on the table saying, hey, Corey Littleton from Washington, Corey Littleton from Washington, Corey Littleton from Washington. It's the perfect time to get Corey Littleton from Washington. Falls on deaf ears. Nobody's listening to Joe Barry, all right? They don't draft him. Where does Corey Littleton end up that year? It's 2016. As an undrafted free agent with the Los Angeles Rams. A year later, Joe Barry comes over from Washington with Sean McVay on the staff of the Los Angeles Rams. Who's on the roster? Corey Littleton. So fate, as fate would have it, Joe Barry ended up getting to work with the guy that he was pushing for in the draft when he was in Washington. Nobody was listening to him at that point. And you know, the rest is history. Corey Littleton is a good player, but it shows you the importance of listen to the guys that are going to coach these guys. Listen to the guys that have an understanding of what it is that they're looking for at certain positions. And that was one where Washington, I'm sure, to this day, regretted not listening to Joe Barry. I don't know who they drafted. I'd have to go look back at it. But if you're the Raiders, if you're Mike Mayock, if you're John Gruden, if you're the decision makers the ultimate decision makers with the Raiders, it's important to listen to those guys. It's important to listen to Rod Marinelli. It's important to listen to Richard Smith, the new linebacker coach. It's important to listen to Ron Miles, the secondary coach, and of course, Gus Bradley. And at least from my conversations with Mike Mayock, when I last talked to him, he was bringing that up. He was bringing up the input that Gus Bradley and his staff has already had on him in terms of what it is that they're looking for. And if you can articulate that clearly, it makes the scouts' jobs and the general manager's jobs so much easier, because then they can condense that down to those guys that filter into those type that profile, and then you send, you know, you give the, that information, that tape, to the coaches and have them put the grades on them and say which one of these guys would really work for the system, which ones don't. Let's get rid of those guys. Which one of the guys here fits for this system? And if you can listen to those guys and be open-minded about it, it makes your job that much easier. And usually the depth chart looks a lot better as a result. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignore.
What's good, Raider Nation? There is a Carl Joseph sighting in Henderson. He is visiting with the Raiders. The former Raiders safety is in Henderson right now visiting with the Raiders. It's been kind of described to me as a weighing options, kind of a get together right now. So we'll see where all that goes. But obviously, Carl Joseph, the former Raider safety who played last year in Cleveland, is here in town visiting with his former team. I'll keep you posted if I hear anything more as far as any expectation of him signing. But again, the way it was described to me, weighing his options, so to speak. So we'll see if he's a real option to bring back. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. To me, again, that would be a signing of, you know, a guy that you're familiar with, a guy that you know. Is he the guy that I think the Raiders would line up as the starter if they brought him in? Well, if he beats out whoever else they bring in, then he would be the starter. But I think they have bigger plans at the free safety position, and I think that it starts with the draft. But there you go. Carl Joseph is in town visiting with the Raiders, and at least brings some experience. He wouldn't be expensive whatsoever. But we'll see. So there's your update on the Raiders secondary. And while we're at it, you know, we could always let's take a look at who else is available at that safety position. I haven't looked at the updated list in a little while, but there's some interesting names that are still out there. Let me get to that list. If I can, Trey Boston is still available. Malik Hooker, isn't Hooker still available? I gotta check on that. But there's still some options out there, without question. But I think more than anything, the Raiders are keeping an eye on that draft. I think there's whether you're talking about Moreg from TCU, Javon Holland from Oregon, Richie Grant from the University of Central Florida, Andre Sisco from Syracuse. There's a path available to the Raiders where they could add multiple free safety or multiple safeties in the draft, and see where it goes there as far as the draft goes. But Carl Joseph, interesting. They traded. You know, it's just funny how life works sometimes. And I'm not saying he is going to sign with the Raiders. It's just interesting how it all works sometimes. But you know, when we're talking about the safety position, obviously Jonathan Abram is a huge piece over there at that spot. But it's really interesting to me because Gus Bradley, the system that he's going to run, is different than what Paul Gunther was running, and there's going to be differences in how the defensive backs play. And there was argument being made throughout the course of last season from people that I was talking to, saying that the Raiders' secondary players weren't being utilized correctly by Paul Gunther and that staff. What they were asking him to do didn't necessarily fit with their skill levels or their skill sets. And so sometimes, you know, just changing it up from that perspective becomes really important. I always tell this story. Marcus Peters gets traded to the Rams. Who's the defensive coordinator? Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips is a guy that likes to press cover on the corners, with the corners, in man-to-man situations in order to be able to free up people to go blitz. You know, he liked to blitz. He wanted to blitz. But part of blitzing means, you know, you have to have guys that can defend in man-on-man, one-on-one situations. Because obviously, you're taking what would have been a pass defender and rushing him on the quarterback, right? So that's what he likes to do. That's what Wade Phillips likes to do. Here comes Marcus Peters. He's not good at it. It took him about 8 games, and he was horrible, playing horrible. And Wade Phillips had the fortitude to say, you know what? I'm doing this guy a disservice. So he switched everything up to allow Marcus Peters to be more of a zone cover guy, which is what he excels at. And his season got turned around, Marcus Peters' did. And the Rams end up going to the Super Bowl. They end up trading him because he really wasn't an ideal fit in Wade Phillips' defense. But Wade Phillips made it work by being flexible as a coach. And I say that because I think there's talent on this Raiders team that just hasn't been utilized correctly these last couple of years. It'll be interesting to see how guys like Jonathan Abram, David Arnett, Trayvon Mullen, how that translates, Corey Littleton, with the new defensive coaching staff, what the plan will be to use these guys in a way that better suits what it is that they do. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. I want to say thank you to everybody that called. A bunch of calls. We love it. Love the energy. Damon Cotton, thanks for everything that you do. Sorry about putting you on the spot about the salary cap. I hear what you're saying, brother. It's all good. You know that. I want to say thanks to Tequila Embajador. There's some great big things that are coming up. Can't wait to share it all with you. But that's definitely on the horizon. We'll be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. To all the listeners out there, we really appreciate it. The numbers are really, really strong, and we thank you for that. Talk to you guys tomorrow, 4 to 6, in the huddle. Vinny Monsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.